set out places that we can continue with the briefing on the program policy development and research. Over to the secretary, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the intergovernmental anti-gang strategy, this strategy provides for interventions targeted at socio-economic issues surrounding gangsterism and its root causes. Where we are as with this course, with this project, sorry, we started it last year, but we held up because NICOC was also requested by the Justice Crime Prevention and Security Cluster to conduct a risk threat assessment. We did that in the provinces. We worked together with them. They presented a report to the Director of Demos Cluster last week. We are at the stage where we're looking at the existing diagnostic of existing gang strategies. We decided we may not need to duplicate and write a new strategy. Let's look at what's existing. So we looked at Free State, Eastern Cape. We're in Western Cape next week, and one other province. And I can't remember, but in any case, so we're looking at that. Our diagnosis should be ready by August. And as a gang strategy, we hope to finish by December this year. I must say it's a collaborative effort between quite a few departments. It's correctional services, we're looking at prison gangs, it's us, it's NICOC, it's quite a few other departments. Social development, including education. The review of public order policing, what we're doing here is we're conducting an assessment on the status of the public order police units, and we're looking at it from recruitment to training to the equipment and then to operational commands. We're also looking at the Secretariat, Civilian Secretariat wrote a policy in 2012 on public order policing, so we're looking at the implementation of that together with our MLE unit and to see whether we can identify further policy gaps. I think that's on that. We'll also have to wait for the Parliament Commission recommendations on public order on the Marikana event. The impact of firearms control legislation, I'm glad the Honourable Member is here. If you would just bear with me, it's quite a mouthful. We've got quite a lot of things that we're going to be looking at when it comes to... Sure, I can't even find my notes. Okay. Essentially what we're looking at in this project is the Firearms Control Act was put into operation in 2000, so we want to look at where we are at with this. So we're looking at the data in terms of supply, possession, safe storage, and transfer of and use of firearms. We're looking to identify aspects of the Firearms Control Act and related mechanisms that have contributed to the reduction in gun deaths and gun-related crimes. We also want to explore the number of firearm applications made at police stations every year, and to be working together with our provincial counterparts on that. We work with them on one project per year, so that's the one we identify to work with them on. And then we look at the process of the destruction of firearms as one of the objectives. And then the last one is to undertake a docket analysis to determine the number of firearm incidents with registered and unregistered firearms. So it's quite a huge project. We will only complete it at the end of the financial year because of the large-scale project, but also because we're working with our provincial counterparts on that. That's the last of my project. And then the maintenance of the resource center. Our resource center serves as an information hub for the civilian secretariat. We want to expand it to our provincial counterparts as well so that they can access information from us. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the presentation. We will now take questions from members on this program. Maybe I will start in terms of questions. Maybe to indicate that all information that is taken to Parliament and the committee should of course be correct and verified and in order. We had, during our preparations for these hearings, a briefing from the Institute for Security Studies. And they again raised the issue of the crime stats of SAPS. We subsequently asked the National Commissioner in our interaction with her, those concerns were raised by ISS, what is her view? Her view was, we are not moving our position, that's our position. I think it's also very important going forward that this committee, we must have assurance that is produced during that process is correct and that we can rely on that. Maybe just to get the perspective from the Secretariat side, what is your view? Do you agree with the Institute of Security Studies, do you agree with the National Commission? And maybe ways going forward, how are we going to ensure collectively that what is produced is correct, to ensure that we can interpret trends and decrease crime in the country? I mean, that is, of course, the aim. That is going to be quite important. Then we requested the National Commissioner and a team, due to the fact of that incident with at the firearms registry, or the arrest that was taken place in the Western Cape, that they brief us in August on the whole question of firearms. So we appreciate that. I know it's a long-term project, but I think it would be good if the Secretariat, maybe interim results or, you know, analysis could also be made at the same occasion, that the committee, you know, receive a broad perspective on what's happening in that field. Honourable Mbele, then Honourable Molebatse.
Thank you, Chair. Just a question on the draft policy on reducing barriers to reporting crimes of GBV. Will that also include an aspect of looking at the challenges faced by lesbian and transgender women and secondary victimization when presenting at police stations? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my first question is on the backlogs at firearm registry. My second question is, I see you don't have stipulated targets. What is going to guide you? Thanks, Chair.
Thanks. Other questions from members at this stage? Over to the Secretary.
just on the crime stats, quite a difficult one, because as there's a common saying amongst researchers, there lies, lies, and then there's crime stats. I think crime stats all around the world are always open to lots of controversies and questions around it. As I understand it, that SAP have done a policy, they have developed a policy. They are busy finalising that policy on crime stats, and we've been asked to make input, and we will be making input into that. We do believe that there is a need for that policy to be implemented and to be made known to the public, because I think sometimes some of the discrepancies arise because the public don't understand how you got to where you've got to with regard to the crime stats. So I think for us, the short of the answer is that we believe that that policy needs to be finalised as a matter of urgency within SAPS around the crime stats, and that policy should be presented to the Portfolio Committee for the Portfolio Committee to also look at and interrogate. And we think that that would go some way, and then it should be made known to the public how SAPS is going to handle crime stats, so that it does remove some of the issues around crime stats. We are also aware that the ISS and some of the organisations have also been engaged in that policy, and so that would be for us the important way forward in terms of looking at how SAPS is managing the crime stats, is for them to present that policy as soon as possible to this committee, and then to actually make that policy known in terms of the crime stats. I think also we need to clarify, one area that I do think we need to clarify is the percentages that we use in terms of the population ratios. I think we need a very scientific thing of, this is the percentages of the population ratios that we're going to use, and these are the census figures that we're going to use, and when those change, we make those known that they have changed, because I think that caused a lot of tension over the last year, that lack of clarity as to what the population ratios that the police were using. So for me that would be the important way forward in terms of the crime stats. In terms of the firearms, I think that the committee needs to be aware. You will remember that the Minister of Police, the previous Minister of Police, during his last budget vote, did announce that there was an inquiry that was being established into gun dealerships and firearms more generally, and that inquiry is about to finish its report, and that report will be handed over to the Minister within the next within the next 6 weeks or so, they will be handing that report. So I think although we may not have been finished our research, that inquiry that the Minister had commissioned into the firearms will be finished by the time you ask that to come and present. And I think that it would be, so there would be information that would be available coming from that independent inquiry into the firearms. With regard to the backlogs, the committee may be aware that in 2010-2011, we did an evaluation of the Central Firearms Registry. At that point, I think the Minister went public with the report. And if for new members of the committee, we'd be happy to supply you with a copy of that report into the functioning of the Central Firearms Registry. And at that stage, the backlogs were sitting at 1.3 million. And that was in 2011, beginning of 2011. I must say that SAPS did, over the next year, SAPS worked concertedly to reduce that backlog. These were backlogs in firearm license applications, people who had applied for firearm licenses and whose firearm licenses had been sitting in the Central Firearms, and we had a backlog of 1.3 million. And over that year, a team was brought in to SAPS to try and reduce that backlog. As I understand it, the backlog is less than 100,000, and I think it's even less than that, gone to about 30,000. So it has been, the backlog of firearm applications has gone down from 1.3 to less than 30,000, and even those 30,000 are in the on the whole less than 6 months old. There are every now and then complaints that we receive where a firearm application is outstanding for longer than that 6 month period, but on the whole then SAPs are able to action it very quickly. I think what would be important is that there are two aspects to the firearms. The backlogs were, I think that my view is that I would take my hat off to SAPs for the way in which they conducted the backlog and worked through that backlog process. I think there are still, however, weaknesses in the Central Firearms Registry system that need to be worked on, that are still a work in progress within SAPs. And I think the other area that is important is to look at the management of SAPs as weapons themselves, weapons that belong to SAPs. And when they do come and report, we did do, apart from the inquiry report, which should be going to the Minister in the next 6 weeks or so, we also did, our oversight unit did do a report, it is about 2 years old, looking at the management of SAPs as firearms and how SAPs is managing their own firearms. So we could also use that report as a basis when the police come to present to you, and could provide the committee with a copy of that report. And then in terms of the specific, I think that that we have tried to be quite specific in our APPs of exactly what reports we will be presenting, we will be doing in terms of policy, but I'll just ask.
Thank you, Secretary. Honourable Chair, to answer the question on the barriers policy, and the policy that had taken on a very victim-centred approach, we are looking at the LGBTI community, and we're also looking at providing, that SAPS needs to provide victim services. We have the policy norms, standards around the establishment and management of these victim services are all going to be part of the policy. I didn't answer two questions from previously, the detective policy and where we are at it. Honourable Member, we have finalised the policy. We got to present to the detective that General Moon has been very busy with the Oscar Pistorius trial, so it's been having a bit of delay putting him down, but we have a meeting with him this Thursday, so we hope to finalise it. But we also presented to the portfolio committee, like the secretary indicated last year. So it's basically the same thing put into a policy. In terms of the targets and Honourable Diane Palavana's question about our time frames and deadlines. On page 22 of our, 32, sorry, of our APP, the white paper on the police, like I indicated, it's been done, and we want to take it to Captain by August, so in the second quarter it will be done. The serial, the policy on the serial rape and murder will be done in the third quarter, that's December. The white paper on safety and security will only be done at the end of the financial year because it's a macro policy and we're working together with other government departments. The barriers policy on reducing barriers will be done in the third quarter, that's also in December. Our review of public order policing will be done in the third quarter as well, because we are awaiting the Farm Commission recommendations as well. The gangs, integrated anti-gang strategy will be done in the first and end of the second quarter, that's hopefully in August, I think. Supposed to be done in the first quarter, but we are waiting, we spend the time waiting for the NICOP risk and threat assessment. The trend report we're going to do in the second quarter, we'll finish that in the second quarter, and then the firearms control legislation project will be done at the end of the financial year because we're working with our provincial counterparts.
Thank you. Other questions? And maybe just in the issue of mitigation of risks, the proper development of realistic milestones. I think members earlier referred to the complaints of the previous commission about legislation that was promised and not before. I think you've indicated now the green paper, white paper process. But can you give a proper, realistic, will the secretary target date? When will the new SAPS Act come to this committee? You know that is, you know, just to get a sense, also in terms of our own planning for the term.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to the SAPS Act, the review of the SAPS Act, it was put down for finalisation last year, but because of the white paper that wasn't finalised, it was put on hold. And in the meantime, what we have done, we have embarked on a number of diagnostic meetings and workshops with various stakeholders and role players. And together with SEPS, we have put together a joint task team, and we worked out an action plan. We worked out six phases, which this whole finalization of action will take. The first was the pre-drafting, which included all the meetings, the diagnostic meetings, and which specific areas are going to be reviewed. The drafting phases, and that's where we are at the moment. There's six phases, so we are at the drafting phase, and the first two are the largest of these phases that we worked out. And in terms of our APPs, it's set down for development by the end of March next year.
Just to say that also what we've done in our APPs with our legislation, because it was the biggest bone of contention with the portfolio committee, is we've broken our legislation program up into number of bills finalised for public consultation. So they aren't necessarily tabled there, but they are published for public consultation. Number of bills on policing developed in that year, so they would be developed and finalised in that year, but not necessarily tabled. And then the number of bills tabled in Parliament, because we need to realise that legislation, particularly with the consultation processes, takes longer than was initially anticipated. So we've tried to, within our APPs, break it down so that the portfolio committee can measure us better in terms of what we agreed to table, what we agreed to develop, and what we agreed to publish for public consultation during that financial year. And that's on page 33 of our APP.
Jumped a bit now with a question, but it's fine. Any other questions from members on this section? If there's questions that you want to pose, we can do it at the end. I think let's go to the next section, the legislation.
Before the budget.
Thank you, Chair. The purpose of the legislation is to provide legislative support services to the Secretary of Police.
Our strategic objective is an effective and constitutionally compliant departmental legislative framework for effective policing. In terms of the sequence of the legislation program and the processes that will be followed in this financial year, the following areas will be of priority. As Secretary alluded to earlier on, we've broken the legislation up into the different stages at which the bill will be presented. The first one that I'm going to deal with is the bill for public consultation. That is the Animal Movement and Produce Bill, which repeals the Stock Theft Act. This bill has already been prepared, and we are now in the process of holding further consultations with stakeholders before it's submitted to Cabinet for approval for introduction in Parliament. The consultations will be finalised by the end of September 2012, according to the annual performance plan, but it's not, 2014, but it's not on the parliamentary schedule for 2014-2015. The next bill, will be the bills to be developed. The revised South African Police Service Bill. As previously stated, this bill is to align with the Constitution and with approved policies. It was put on hold pending the finalization of the White Paper on Police. And as a substitute for this comprehensive review of the Theft Amendment Act, the following pieces of legislation were dealt with in Parliament. The first was the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Amendment Bill 2012, which relates to DNA. That was passed in December 2013. The second one was the Private Security in Industry Regulations Amendment Bill 2012, which was passed by Parliament in March 2014, and we are now awaiting direction by the President on this bill. Okay, with regards to the South African Police Service Bill, the preliminary consultations were held with provinces, provincial departments, and certain civil society stakeholders for inputs on the reviews. We held meetings with SAP on the development of the process to draft the bill. That's what we were talking about, the joint task team that was formed and the phases that we had drafted. Preliminary assessment of the areas of review of the current act was done, and the bill is to be drafted now to align with the Constitution and the White Paper on Police. The second bill that we have for this financial year to be developed is the Firearms Control Amendment Bill. In this bill, we seek to amend the definitions of the Firearms Control Act to provide for the verification by accredited associations of applications by its members to possess a firearm, to provide for the validity period of competency certificates, and to provide for the designation of a firearms officer at each of the police stations to strengthen the control over firearms in the possession of the police, other official institutions, and cyber security service providers, among other amendments. This draft bill has already been developed, and we are in the preliminary stages of consultations. There's further consultations that's still to be held. The bill is to be finalized by the end of December 2014, and it's also not part of the parliamentary schedule for 2014-2015. The next bill to be tabled in Parliament is the National Key Points Amendment Bill. The National Key Points Amendment Bill is it's been renamed the Critical Infrastructure Bill. This bill has also been prepared for consultation before submission to Cabinet for approval, and is to be tabled in Parliament by the end of September 2014. Then we have the bills to be tabled in Parliament, the bills There's another one, the Protection of Constitutional Democracy Against Terrorists and Related Activities Amendment Bill. That bill has also been drafted, and consultations are being finalised. It's also due to be tabled in Parliament by the end of September 2014. Lastly, we have the regulation, Criminal Law Forensic Amendment Act, so the DNA Act. As we speak, there's a meeting going on in Pretoria with SAF to deal with the implementation of the SAF Act. And the regulations have already been drafted. There's a consultation, other consultations that's taking place on them before they are promulgated. Then with regards to the Private Security Industry Regulations Act, as Secretary spoke about earlier on, the reason why it's act there is because it was passed by Parliament in March this year, and there's regulations that have to be drafted, but those regulations will only be drafted when we know what the outcome will be from the President.
Ask that the Australia Committee, those are the dates we had set in our APPs. However, the Minister will be tabling the actual specific dates with the Speaker for the legislation. So I would ask that, I mean, I know it's with the Minister, the proposed date for when the legislation will be tabled is with the Minister, and he will be tabling it so it can be sent to this committee with the dates of the legislation. So the dates may change depending on what the Minister says. So just to be aware of that, in the next week or so the Minister will be tabling his legislative programme for the year, and then the committee will have the exact dates. Chair.
Right, questions? Honourable Markey, first question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to clarify myself, the process from the beginning of policy development and developing legislation, how does it come about? Does the public ask you to develop something, or do you check on your oversight reports and think this needs to be amended, or we need to have new legislation in relation to this? And from there, how does it, because if you say there's public participation, when the bills come to Parliament, we also have public participation. So how does it, you simply sit down and say, okay, there's something wrong with the police, let's change the law, or let's legislate for them, or what we do, until it becomes an act. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, maybe just to add, and members should come in, I think there was also the analysis made by the previous committee that there must be also consultation with the portfolio committee with these very important legislation before it's stable, you know, just to consult with us. Then I just want to know about the capacity for the Secretary to deal with legislation. The previous committee in the legacy report, you know, raised certain concerns. I just want to know, is the capacity of the legal division within the Secretariat up and running to deal with the issues? Because I think one of the legislation steps had to step in at the portfolio committee level, and as far as I know, legislation is the domain of the Secretariat. So if we can just be briefed on that, you know, and then also, then I think in terms of timelines, we appreciate the priority areas, but for our committee's planning, and we're going to do that beginning September, we need more specific dates. Of course, the Minister will table, but we, from a planning position, especially the issue raised by Honourable Markey regarding public hearings and so on, we need to have those dates early, because we, when we set down our program, it's going to be very difficult to change. So I just want to make those observations. Other questions from members? Right, let's take those, Secretary.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, the capacity issue and SAP setting it, it was actually SAP and ourselves that had to set in. It was a terrible, and it was actually drafted by Sarah, and a joint team of ourselves and SAP had to set it, rather than a bill that was drafted by ourselves and SAP having to set into our bill. It was actually somebody else's bill that SAP and ourselves jointly had to set in. We basically have been, I think I mentioned earlier that we have been given some money from Treasury, and we're busy doing a work study at the moment with DPSA on how to spend that money, and one of the areas we are going to need to look at is legislation in terms of capacity. I think that drafting skills are, that there's a shortage of drafting skills in the country per se, so it's not necessary. So we have also spoken to the School of Governance. I think our HR department has spoken to the School of Governance about the, how they can assist with the drafting skills of people in the Secretariat. But we also do generally draft these bills in a joint drafting team with SAP. So it becomes a joint process between ourselves and SAP. So we kind of bank on each other's skills in this regard. In terms of the dates that the chairperson was asking about, the firm dates of exactly what date will be in the minister's when he tables the legislation, we'll be able to say by the 5th of September or whatever else we will bring the bill to Parliament. So that will be included in the report that the Minister will be sending, and I know he's busy. He had spoken to myself about it, and he's busy applying his mind to that, and so it should be tabled within the next week or so in Parliament and sent through to assist you with your planning dates. In terms of the process of how we decide on a bill or policy, be it policy or bill, it's from a variety of different ways. Sometimes it's the portfolio committee itself that actually would say, we think that there are weaknesses in this legislation or that legislation that needs to be amended. Other times it would come from the executive authority who's identified. So for example, the review of the national key points and even its name change comes from the minister himself saying to us, look, this piece of legislation was actually developed during the apartheid era, and we have a new constitution and we need to align it with the constitution, and it came directly from the executive authority who tasked us with that position. Other times you would have a piece of legislation which receives a significant amount of criticism from community members, from people in the area, and then you would want to look at that. And other occasions, it's gaps that we have identified through our monitoring and policy work that would need legislative intervention. And sometimes it's the Constitutional Court. So in the case of the DPCI, the South African Peace Service Amendment Act, it's the Constitutional Court that would refer it to ourselves to draft. So it comes through a variety of different processes. There's no single... We don't wake up one day and just decide this is the legislation. It comes through processes. So the Firearms Control Amendment Bill that was spoken about, people both from the gun group and from the those opposed to the gun-free associations have raised concerns about the Firearms Control Act for some time. Our research and our work on firearms seems to support that there are areas that need to be tightened up with the Firearms Control Act, and then we would engage with it. Sometimes even SAP brings us aspects. So the stock theft, the change of the stock theft, it was actually SAP saying, this bill is outdated, this act is outdated, we need to update it. Can we work with you in updating it? So it would come. What we have tried to do as far as possible, not so much when you're talking about the Firearms Control Act, we already have a policy. There was a very good policy that was developed by government before the Firearms Control Act was put into operation. We wouldn't necessarily want to change that policy because it was a very extensive process to come up with a policy. But in other instances where there's an absence of policy, we would prefer to look at developing a policy first. So when it comes to the National Key Points Review, what we have done is we've developed a policy looking at what should our policy position be on critical infrastructure in the country. And we are at a point where we are just waiting for a meeting with SAP before we finalise that policy. We've consulted with other government departments And we're just waiting for the meeting with them. And that will then inform the drafting of the review of the national key point for the national critical infrastructure, because I'm not sure that it's likely to be called the National Critical Infrastructure Act. So that would inform that process in terms of how it works. In terms of how we identify policy, it's a similar process. Sometimes complaints would come like the reporting, the barriers to reporting cases of rape, etc. And the serial rapists, it was a group of 22 or 28 women's organizations that came to meet with us and said, these are the problems. And they represented a significant constituency of women. And we then engaged with other government departments, the Justice Department, who are leading that task team, and other departments, and felt like, yes, this was an important piece of work for us to develop policy on. Other times our oversight unit would identify an area where there's a policy gap, and we would work on it. So it comes through a variety.
Right, more questions on this sector from members? Right, can we move on to the next section?
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I'll start with the presentation of the budget for this program. We've already touched on the program classification of the budget, that it constitutes 24% of the total budget of the Secretariat. However, I'd like to shed some light on some other aspects relating to the economic classification. Other than the compensation of employees, the significant item there is travel and subsistence. It takes 13% of the budget. This is due to the nature of work that they do. 8% goes to the computer services, that is ICT systems. What is important is to note that this constitutes 97% of the total Secretariat ICT budget. The reason for that is the ICT infrastructure required for administrative support. The budget will be transferred from SAPS with the transfer of ICT governance functions and related functions. This is in terms of the memorandum of understanding with SAPS management. That was part of SAPS management that relates to the transfer of functions. This also applicable to the budget for office accommodation. When the functions are transferred, the related funds will also be transferred there. I thought I should just highlight that so that you can see why this 97% of the ICT infrastructure, ICT systems budget is budgeted under this sub-program. Other than that, Chairperson, I think most of the items were highlighted when we dealt with the program classification. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. The program has three sub-programs, as the CFO has indicated. The first one is police performance, conduct, and compliance monitoring. The second one is police policy and program evaluation. And the third sub-program is information management system. Coming to the purpose of the first sub-program is to monitor the performance, conduct, and compliance of the South African Police Service, a strategic objective to improve police accountability. I will go to the priority areas. In line with our function of monitoring the performance of the South African Police Service, we conduct effective oversight monitoring visits to local police stations. This is done through our monitoring tools that we have developed, and we have also agreed upon them with the different provincial secretaries. So we have the clause that they have agreed on, and they are using this clause to develop reports. And we also developed trend analysis report on police station service delivery. This is to also monitor the service delivery by police station. What happened is that the provinces, they develop quarterly reports, which they submit to us, and we develop a trend analysis report based on the oversight visits by us as well as by the provinces. The third one, report on SAP's implementation of public order policy. This is the project that has been highlighted by policy units to say we are conducting this project together with them. This project, we are taking public awareness regarding the communities that are striking in terms of the responsibilities of the communities that are striking. Also to look at the awareness in terms of whether they understand legislation with regard to public gathering, the Dangerous Weapons Act, and firearms control. And the project also looks at exploring the role of organized structures such as CPS and CSS, and also to check the public perception in terms of how police respond to protest. In this case, we look also at the response time and the level of communication. Assessment of SAPS budget. These are the reports that we analyze biannual reports that we analyze with respect to the budget of the SAPS and the performance in terms of the in performance of the SAPS. Monitoring of reports on implementation of Child Justice Act, public order policy, IP recommendations. These are the compliance reports which we look at in terms of whether the SAPS is complying with the several of the regulations. In terms of the assessment report on SAP litigation management, we look at issues of the process of litigation and the professional conduct of the SAP members. Developing complaint management policies, this we look at the issue of how best can we manage complaints. During the dialogue, there was a suggestion that we need to develop an integrated complaints management system, which came out of the dialogue that was done last year. With regard to monitoring of the DVA Act, we look at the compliance. The Secretary has also indicated that we have two reports that are ready for tabling by the Minister. Coming to the sub-program policy and program evaluation, the purpose therefore is to evaluate the effectiveness of programs implemented by the South African Police Service. Strategic objectives to improve program implementation effectiveness. The following areas are of priority. We will be evaluating different acts which have been passed by the SAPS. These are the DNA Act, which we are going to evaluate the design of the Act. We will also be evaluating two other acts, which is the Fingerprints Act. We are going to look at the implementation of that Act, and also the Second Hand Book Act. There was a question with regard to this one to say whether the review was conducted and how many police stations were looked at. The review was evaluated last year during quarter 1 and 2, and about 185 police stations were looked at. And we can share the report with the members in this regard. The second focus area is the report on implementation of Secretariat and Portfolio Committee recommendations. This, if I may say, is also a sector indicator that we agreed upon with the provinces to say we need to start to report on the implementation of recommendations, all the recommendations that we are getting, also including those recommendations that were made by the portfolio committee, especially with regard to the national secretariat. We have agreed that it will be a yearly report, which means it will be produced at the end of every financial year, where we will look at all the recommendations and produce annual report. With regard to M&E capacity building sessions, we have alluded to the fact that we are developing an information management system to be able to report on all the service delivery oversight that we are conducting. So this will be the training with regard to the IMS, including national monitoring tools, GVA training, and other training that will be conducted within the unit. IMS is Information Management System. We will be conducting training on that one. The National Monitoring Tool and the Domestic Violence Act Tool. With regard to sub-program information management, the purpose is to provide reliable, accurate, timely information that will inform evidence-based decision-making. The strategic objective, to enhance information management. The following areas will be of priority, the VVA. Last year we have conducted phase one of the information management system, which is the IMS that I was talking about. So we have developed a data collection tool for the national monitoring tool, where we are going to look at a number of things that we need for that system, for in case the dashboard, the graphics, the tables, a number of them. So we are moving towards the domestic violence tool, also to look at what we need the system to do for us, looking at the graphs, tables, all the things that will make things easy for us to write reports in this regard. So we'll look at the DVA tool. We will also finalize outstanding issues within the National Monitoring Force. Looking at the risks and mitigation of risks, the first risk we have access to data from SAC. We've been conducting sessions with top management. However, we feel that we need to improve institutional arrangements with staff in order for us to get more information from staff. Lack of common understanding on the secretary's mandate by staff. This will refer to if we want to look at certain things within the staff, sometimes they feel like we are becoming too operational, or we are looking at the issues that we are not supposed to look at. So we need to also improve on that one. Mitigation of risk, sessions with relevant staff, top management to discuss access to data, sessions with staff to top management to discuss legislative obligations of this entity. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Honorable Malabati, Honorable Sir, Honorable Mabija, Honorable Marky, then myself. Yes.
Are all vehicles within sub fitted with AVL? A second question is, in the past financial year,
we had this marked police vehicle that went about in Gauteng, driven by criminals, terrorizing people. We were told it was confiscated and so on. What is the situation with that vehicle? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is one. Is that there are police officers who cannot use computers? What is the arrangement to equip them?
Thank you, Chairperson. Civilian Secretariat has a very good vision, a transformed and accountable police service that reflects the values of our developmental state. And now we are on sub-program. Police performance, conduct and compliance monitoring. And as I was listening, we do have tools here, which are mentioned here. But then, I'm asking myself whether the civil secretariat has got a monitoring tool on the sub-members themselves, so that when they implement programs, they are very sober-minded. Why I'm saying this is these days, most of the police members, they are now becoming a threat to the society. A society we expect them to protect. More especially during the night, during weekends, and sometimes even during the week. You come across very aggressive sub-members, and when you look in the eye, you can detect that this person is either heavily drunk or he's high on drugs. And I don't think that it will be good for us to spend a lot of money to having the sub-members who are now a threat to the community. When you come across some accident scenes, you can see a member, sub-member, searching the victim of that accident. You can see them that they are useless, they are drunk, they cannot help the casualties there. And what I'm just pleading, if we do not have that monitoring tool on the sub-members themselves in order to be more productive, then we are just wasting time. One other thing, even the drugs, what do we call them? Substance, what? These sub-members, they protect people who sell drugs to Vonyaupe and etc. When it is said we are going to make a search, guy, those people will know that they are coming. They are informed that do away with those things, we are coming. And at night, the police are the ones who go there to buy those things, to deliver those things. That's why I'm saying, do we have a monitoring tool for the sub-members themselves so that they become productive? Because if you check on NIDO issues and others, you might suspect that police are doing such horrible actions because they are high or under the influence. And once they are found guilty, we dismiss them from job, and we are adding on unemployment, the thing that we are trying to fight. and I don't think we are just going in circles. Firing a policeman is not a good thing. Let's make them good policemen rather than to just let them do as they wish. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Markey.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one or two questions on monitoring. The actual monitoring, I'm just interested on how it happens. If there's a protest somewhere, you go there and see whether the police shoot or do they use violence on people. How do you do that? Do you have to wait until somebody comes and complain, or you can physically go there and sit at the corner and see how they do it, and then so that you can be able to write your own report or whatever. On the S&T is what? Traveling and subsistence. Most of the times, this is not synchronized with the target. Find that you say you will go and visit 200 police stations, but your budget doesn't correspond with those 200 police stations, meaning that it's not enough for accommodation, you don't even have transport. So meaning that when you budget, maybe you don't look at how that will correspond. And you might find that your S&T is in state decreasing, where you are supposed to be monitoring, you add on more police stations whilst the S&T is decreasing. And one other interesting point on the monitor, interesting to me, is that if you are not vetted, doesn't it happen sometimes where the police say, no, we can't tell you that because you are not vetted? Don't you reach such situations? Because definitely it can happen. If you are not vetted, you can't give you this information. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We'll take these questions and go to another round. Welcome to the ISP member of the committee, Mr. Mankel. Welcome to you. You can just indicate if you want to come in at any stage. Check you.
Maybe just to explain the tools. Basically, our tool is a station tool, which looks at how the station is operating. So we would look at how the 30 stores being run, which is the evidence stores. However, the cells being run, how's the community service center, how's the OB book looking, how's the detectives being run, and that tool then is, we have a special IT system which can capture the information arising from that tool. We don't have a specific tool on the individual police officer themselves. It would be something we need to think through. I hear what the Honourable Member saying, and I think it's something we need to think through and look at it. I think another thing that also we need to look at is the health and wellness program within SAC, because if you look at the amount of substance abuse that occurs within SAC, and a report I think that came out last year about alcoholism in one particular province within SAC members, it also indicates that the stresses of the job also need to be taken into consideration when we're looking at this, but we don't at this point have a tool that looks at the individual officer. It's something that we need to think through. Our tools are more about how the station, local station is performing, or the DVA, how DVA is being implemented. In terms of the vehicles, vehicles are marked with ADLs, but the ADLs themselves are a problem because ADLs don't, the areas that are not marked in the country, and for the, in those areas, the ADLs
follow up.
ADR, sorry, ADR.
I'm saying marked or fitted.
Fitted.
Am I not correct that the contract for the AEL left and Becky clearly failed to sign it, and so the whole thing went, is actually dysfunctional right now? Has the contract of tenders gone out again? What is the current situation? Because it's a total catastrophe at one of the many under him.
Then it's on a month-to-month contract because vehicles are still being fitted, but it's not being signed, but it's on a month-to-month contract. But even the AVLs, and I think it is an issue that we need to deal with, is that it's like a GPS. There's some kind parts of the country where it doesn't work. The AVL just it can't tell you where you are, etc. And I know there have been some concerns raised by it. I think it's also a question of how you monitor what. It's all very well to fit a vehicle with the AVL, but it also means that you've got to monitor that. And I know there are there's certainly some best practices that we've seen around the country where the station commission and the station management make use of that to monitor if a vehicle is standing for a long period of time in one place and doesn't move from that place. What is that vehicle doing? Why has it been standing at the shopping centre for 3 or 4 hours? So fitting it is one thing. Managing it is equally as important as fitting it, and then making sure that it actually, that it does work across the board in rural areas, etc., etc., and can actually identify where the vehicle is. With regard,
sorry, Secretary, there's just another AVL question.
Just to say, even the same commander, some of them cannot use this AVL. You go to say to him, show me where this vehicle is. He calls a typist to do it. He can't do. He can't operate the AVL. So it's also a problem.
I mean, we're finding that with a number of systems, not just with the AVL. The OPAM system as well, which is the crime, an OPAM system when the portfolio committee, I'm not sure how to explain it, but when the portfolio committee does their oversight visits, you'll see the OPAM system. But it's supposed to be a tool that will assist police. And we're finding at the local police stations when we do visits that that the wrong people don't know how to use the system. So the system is then not being able to be used as a management tool, as a policing tool. So it's one of the things that we need to look at, not just with the ADL, but with all the different systems that you put into police, because some of the systems the police have got are excellent systems, but they're systems that are supposed to help you manage. The same applies to the performance chart. The performance chart is not a bad system, but it actually needs to be used to manage people. So I think that what the Honourable Member is saying about not being able to use AVL is true, but it's not just on AVL, it's other systems as well. With regard to the masked police vehicles, I think we need to follow up with the National Commission on what happened with that investigation. As I say, it wasn't our investigation, but we need to follow up what happened with that. I think the same issue about police officers not using computers is again something which is an operational issue that needs to be addressed by SAPS, and I think we need to be quite careful about where the Secretariat's role is in terms of operational issues and non-operational issues. I do know that SAPS did sign an agreement at some point to look at assisting SAPS members with use of computers. But I think that for us it's a broader issue than just computers. It's saying, I mean, we've spoken about it with e-dockets, we've spoken about it now with computers, we've spoken about it with AVLs. It's about, we have all these systems and procedures in place and SAPs. And sometimes people will say there are no computers, but it's because people don't know how to use the facilities that are available to them. And it's across the board. We need to look at making sure that the police officers, I mean, if you are one of the things that comes out in the detection strategy, in the detection policy, for example, is it's absolutely crucial that a detective is able to utilize a computer. Because without that computer, there's a whole lot of information that you can actually get access to, that you can get off a computer, you can even get a Google search of an area and understand an area, etc. And so I think that the issue of being able to utilize the equipment that SAPS already has at its ability, at its at the tip of his hand, like computers, like OPAM, like ADL, etc., is something that we need to look at. Rather than just keep increasing the number of systems in SAPS, let's look at the systems we've already got. Are they able to be utilized by the right members in SAPS? The monitoring, how it happens, can I just say that if it's a violent issue, if it's an issue related to violence, that is something which we would immediately hand over to IPA to deal with. So anything that involves police abuse, police shootings, police whatever, it doesn't fall within the mandate. It requires an actual investigation and would be handed over to IPA. And I do know that IPA at one point was looking at when there are serious protests or strikes, having on standby people to be able to go out and deal with how FAPS is managing that strike or that protest. I think we'd have to just follow up with IPA what had happened, but I think it was something which the chairperson started at the time when he was in IPA. Otherwise, our monitoring is not, I mean, the S&T that you spoke about, I must just say that our M&E unit is our worst underspender. So we don't have a budget problem, and it's unlikely that we would cut down our target because we don't, because we have to reduce our budget. Basically, in fact, I'm always saying to the M&E section, you must spend your money, you must spend your money. So I think the point about having to cut things back because we haven't budgeted for it at this point isn't a problem with our monitoring and evaluation unit. But our monitoring and evaluation is not desktop. The monitoring and evaluation teams go out to the local stations. They actually check. They physically go and look at the SAPS 13 stores. If they're monitoring the FCS units, they would physically go and look at the FCS units, physically go and look at the occurrence books. So we don't monitor from our offices. We actually go out into the field. Most of our monitoring is field monitoring. And hence what the CFO said about the amount we spend on S&T in terms of our budget. And with regard to vetting, I think we have asked the state security to fast track our vetting. But at this stage, SAPS has got just as big a problem with vetting as we have. So it's going to be very difficult for them to turn around and say, you can't have access to this unless you vet it, because they are experiencing the very same problems as ourselves with regard to vetting, but it is something that we need to fast track. It hasn't happened up till now, but it is something that we need, that could happen, and we need to fast track that vetting.
Right, the question from my side, and then we're going to go to the colleagues. In terms of the submission, in terms of the conduct and compliance monitoring, there's two items that, you know, big items: the assessment of the SAPS budget, the analysis report, and the assessment report on SAPS litigation management. Now, that's complex issues to analyze and you know, come with recommendations. I'm not clear from the targets and the indicators in the APP what are we actually want to do with that. And my further question is, the capability of the secretary to do it, is that there? Yeah, I mean, a lot of the questions this afternoon focus on the functioning of a police stations. Now, the National Commissioner indicated in her testimony that they have added an additional level of management, the deputy station commissioner who's going to deal with admin. Now, my question is, looking generically at the issues that must be monitored and evaluated to ensure that they service delivery at the 1,100 plus police stations in the country, shouldn't, you know, looking at the total picture and what is priority for the secretary focusing on those generic management issues, maybe, I'm just asking, then these big, items that is really very difficult to assess and, I just want to get a sense of that, because the target and the indicator in the APP doesn't convince me, and shouldn't we be focusing more operational, you know, in terms of the system? Honourable Molabatsi.
Yeah, 100%. Many police stations don't have
victim empowerment facilities, how do you hope to improve that? My second question is, in your visit to the police station, do you visit SAP 13 stores and iCar? And if you do, what are the things that you teach that are not right? Thank you.
Maybe just to give also indication the implementation of the Child Justice Act. You know, it's been raised as a serious concern by the committee in the past, you know, and I just want to get that view in terms of the experiences of the Secretariat, you know. What can we do more to ensure that SAPS police stations are going to comply? Is that now the task of the Deputy Police Station Commander and the Secretariat is going to monitor that as an indicator? Other questions from members?
Chair, we would love to have our legislation amended not to look at SAPS's budget, because we've had long discussions about what is our role versus what is the portfolio role versus what is SCOPA's role, etc. There's so many people looking at SAPS's budget. One can understand that SAPS has the biggest budget of any government department, but we're not really sure that it's actually should be the Secretariat's role. So we've had to try and look at what is it about the budget that makes us different from the portfolio committee? Because the portfolio committee monitors the budget. And essentially, we've come up with that we should be looking at whether, in fact, SAP has allocated money in the budget for the necessary policies and priorities of government and the legislation. Because what we find very often is, take the Second Hand Goods Act. The Second Hand Goods Act was passed, and I think members of the committee that were here could say, it was passed about 6 years ago before it was implemented. It took about 6 years to be implemented. Now, after 6 years, SAPs are saying we don't have budget to implement the Second Hand Goods Act. So those are the kinds of things we would be looking at in terms of the budget, because we need to make our role very different from yourself. But if the committee also feels that we shouldn't be looking at budgets, we'd be very happy with that. It's a legislative requirement that was decided by the portfolio committee, and so we look at the budget of SAPs, and that's how we've decided to deal with it. Litigation is slightly different, because litigation can tell you what are some of your problems in policing. So for example, if you do an analysis of your litigation and you see that in the Northern Cape, the majority of cases you're being sued about are unlawful arrests, then it means that you've got a problem in the Northern Cape with people understanding, police officers understanding arrests and how arrests should take place. So that's how we try to look at the litigation, is to say that you can look at litigation in terms of saying, what early warning systems does this litigation do? What trends in problems in policing does this litigation reveal? Particularly since our litigation in the police is on a steady upward climb. But I also do agree with the chairperson that we should be spending a lot of our energy on stuff which is very easily concrete for us to do, such as the monitoring of stations, etc., etc., and it's something that I think we need to look at in terms of the legislation. With regard to the SAPS 30 stores and the Child Justice, we actually have reports on that. We have a report on the SAPS 30 stores. It's not a good report that the majority of SAPS 30 stores are not well managed. They are not well managed. That evidence is not properly tagged, not properly bagged. Evidence is not sent through to the forensic laboratory as it should be. So rape kits, etc., are not sent through to the... the long and the short of it is that SAPS 13 stores are not properly managed. You have a SAPS 13 clerk who manages the stores, and nobody ever checks on that clerk. So we must say that we have also visited some stations where they were well managed, extremely well managed. Everything's labelled, everything's there, but in the majority of cases, our SAPS 13 stores are not good. And we've recommended to SAPS that they even look at the possibility of setting up specific evidence places where evidence could be stored, not necessarily just at the local station, so it gets transported through to a place that happens. We recently, last year, undertook a visit to the U.S., which the U.S. had invited us on. We looked at how they managed their evidence, and there was quite a lot from there that we have recommended, and we can provide the Portfolio Committee with a report on that. The same applies to the Child Justice Act. We have a report on that too, and we can provide you with that report on how FACTS is implementing the Child Justice Act that we did last year. And we do that annually. We can provide you with that report. I think we just need to make a list of all the reports we've agreed to provide you with. So we will provide you with that report on the Child Justice. I must just also say that there are quite onerous responsibilities placed on FACTS in terms of that Child Justice Act. And I think that FACTS almost agreed to some of those without looking at what the resource implications are. And we've tried to work with FACTS to say to them that there are ways where we just the national instruction around the Child Justice, for the Child Justice Act. We've tried to look at how they could be accommodated, how we could accommodate some of the things that FACTS agree to, which have serious resource implications for FACTS. But we can provide you with that report. With regard to the victim-friendly facilities, we monitor those at the station, but I think the question is, what is FACTS going to do about it? FACTS has set this year a target to improve, and one of government's priorities is to improve the number of victim-friendly. It's one of the, under the outcomes, all people are and feel safe. One of the things that FACTS has agreed to do is to increase its number of victim-friendly centres. But it's not just about having a facility, but it's about how that facility is utilised. And I think one of the things that we feel encouraged by is that FACTS have recently developed standing orders on what should a victim-friendly centre look like. But we would also like to see standing orders on how it should be managed, because even sometimes in stations where you do have a victim-friendly centre, it's not always utilised for the purposes it should be utilised for. So I think at the moment, I think SAP would be able to give you the exact figure, but I think that they are standing at about 80% of their police stations have victim-friendly facilities. But one of the things we need to look at is to what extent are those facilities being properly utilised. Another thing we said that we need to look at with CPS is sometimes when the CPS run those, and that can be positive, but it can also be negative because they take the keys home with them, and when they're not there, those centres don't function or operate.
Other questions? Same from the programme.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add on what the Secretary has been saying, we can also give, if you allow us, our term analysis report. The term analysis report look more or less like the tool that is being used by the Portfolio Committee on our findings and recommendations with regard to a number of focus areas, including victim-friendly facilities, the exhibit stores, CSC, and a whole lot of them. We have a number of reports that we've developed in that regard.
We welcome all reports to the table. We welcome them. Honourable Bailey.
Thanks, Chair. I hope I didn't miss any crucial detail in asking the question. But it just occurred to me now, in terms of the developments of complaints management policies, I recall the Secretary saying that there are some complaints they receive which are referred directly to IPED because they deal with youth abuse and excess force. But there are some that they're currently holding on to because the police don't have, or SAPs don't have the capacity to yet manage them, and so they're sort of dealing with them themselves. Can I just check, where's the dividing line, or what type of cases are the ones that the Secretariat does hold on to and does process? And then linked to that,
would the kind of entity that is envisaged in the Western Cape Community Safety Acts of a provincial police ombud be a help in that regard if it were to be replicated in all provinces? Thank you.
Chair, any service delivery complaint that comes to us directly, we deal with. We only hand it over to ARPIT if it's a violence case. Any other case, we would process at this point. And the reason being, as I said earlier, because if we just handed it to SAP with our reputation, people came to us in the first instance, it would be our reputation that would be at stake. We're really hoping that the policy process that we've embarked on will assist us with being able to hand over those complaints to SAP. I'm not sure about the ombudsman, and I'll tell you why I wouldn't be sure. Firstly, I think that we must be very careful. That was something that I think was raised with the Portfolio Committee when the Act was being debated, not by ourselves, but by institutions, ISS and academic institutions, is we must be careful of taking the responsibility for service delivery and the management of service delivery away from that. Because ultimately that is what they should be accountable for. And that is why, at the end of the day, we shouldn't ultimately be dealing with complaints. We should be handing them over to SAC and monitoring how they deal with them, because it's actually up to them to make sure, in most departments around the country, it's an important thing of accountability how you manage complaints. And an ombudsman almost removes that responsibility from SAC. Somebody else is handling it, and SAC no longer has the responsibility to handle it. The second point is that the ombudsman, unless they have a huge amount of resources, and I'm talking about quite a significant amount of resources, if you look at the number of complaints you receive and the type of complaints you receive, even for ourselves, as the people managing the complaints, we work with SAP on the management of those complaints. So we say to SAP, okay, we want you to, this complaint is about lack of investigation. We want you to relook at this docket and come back to us and tell us about it. But if we were to look at that docket, we would have to have huge amounts of resources. So even an ombudsman is going to have to depend on SAP to actually do some of the work around that complaint anyway, unless they set up a huge structure. ARPIT, for example, only investigates violent cases and cases of serious violence, and each case has to have a specific investigator, etc., etc. Now, if you're going to do that with complaints, you might land up with a very huge structure. So I'm not sure how I feel. I'm not saying I necessarily oppose it. I'm just saying I'm not sure that we must just be very careful of not removing from SAP their responsibility to manage complaints, and also make sure that if we set up a mechanism to deal with complaints, that we basically don't have to add huge amounts of resources to the structure. So those are, yeah.
Right, members, more questions? Right, we will, I just have a couple of questions and then we can give the secretary opportunity to close. Yeah, I just wanted to know the one issue that was raised earlier, also the working agreements with civil society organizations. Currently, I think the climate venture is one per year and so on. Now, the question is the new minister, when he addressed the committee last week, he indicated the second point of his focus would go into be to increase the collaboration with civil society research organizations and so on. I mean, we've seen in various events that happened during this last 12 months, even issues that was raised at the Kailicha Commission and so on, the importance of civil society organizations and to interact with them, get a sense of what's happening, how can we ensure better policing and so on. I just want to get a sense of the vision of the Secretariat. How do you want to take that forward, especially in the light of the Minister's comments at the Portfolio Committee? I know you have finalized this ADT, but I just want to know what extra are you going to do to ensure that there is collaboration between civil society organizations, communities, and your organization?
I think we would do that for a variety of these. On specific areas, we would have areas of cooperation. So, for example, our policy and research has this reference group, which is a formalized group that's actually, in fact, there in terms of legislation, which brings together all your people that are doing research and work on policing, but around policy and research. Our MNE, for example, on specific areas, we've tried to break down, you know, we've tried to break down, and it's something that we've been engaging the ministry about, into sector, dealing with sector engagement. So we have a very good engagement with the business sector, for example, and have ongoing meetings. We've got one on Friday with the entire business sector to together with the ministry to discuss the budget speech. Then we would have the sector that deals with research, and we have another sector that deals with women's organisations that specifically focuses on how we can cooperate on women's issues. So we tried to break it down, but I think that all of us recognise that we need to do more in terms of reaching out, to and very often I think a trap that is very easy for us to fall in is to work with the organised groups, the very organised groups. So if you're talking about business, they're quite organised. If you're talking about the research and academics, they're quite organised. I think one of the things that our strategic partnership unit is looking at and dealing with is how do you bring together your much more CBOs than also just your NGOs, because often the focus is on NGOs, and we need to also be focusing on CBOs, your community-based organisations, as opposed to your just non-governmental organisations, and that's something which I think we still need to work on and build on.
Any questions from the honourable members, from left to right? The honourable member came late. Anything from your side? Okay. Thank you very much. Secretary, final word from you.
I mean, I think I would just like to thank the committee for the time spent on this. I think certainly we feel that these kinds of engagements help us sharpen our ability in terms of moving forward. And we also will be coming to you in the next 2 months or so with our annual report. And I think that I really just want to thank the committee for their time and for being quite as thorough, because from our side that thoroughness helps us when we go back to look at where we should be taking issues, and we certainly will be liaising with the Secretary around all the reports so that we can provide you with those reports. Thanks, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you. I want to thank all the members for their participation and input. I want to also especially thank our research staff, the content advisors, secretariat for their hard work. Maybe from our side, we believe it's very important, again, as I said this morning, that there should be proper police conduct in line with the Constitution. The architecture that was developed there includes the secretariat. The secretariat has got a very important role to play in cooperation with SAPS and IPED and other institutions. But it's also very important, as you've indicated, that the Secretariat Act must be implemented to the fullest. And we as a committee expect those reports, those implementation reports to come to us, that there's also oversight and that we can monitor what the Secretariat is doing, that we, in our own mind, is satisfied, or if we're not satisfied, that we can engage and see how we can improve. Going forward, we will, of course, look at the input and then make our analysis and on Friday adopt the report. We will also, I think, invite the Secretariat when we do our strategic planning as a committee, also to get the perspective on their plans. But it's quite clear going forward the demilitarization of the police is vital. That police conduct must improve, and the resources that the fiscus is making available must work. There must be outcomes at station level. It doesn't help for us to have big bureaucracies, huge spend on items, but there isn't really change on the ground. And the feeling that the members expressed also during last week was, we need to get now results on ground level. There must be outcomes that the people can feel if they go to a police station, that there is respect for members of the public, they're handled with dignity, with care, and their complaints are taken care of. Because we are a caring society, and we must ensure that the police also play that role. So thank you very much. We're looking forward to other interactions in future. Thanks.
Thank you.